All right. Hey, if you have a Bible, you can open that up to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 10. And if you don't, the passages will be up on the screens here shortly. We are in our ongoing study of the life and teachings of Jesus, and this is part three of what I'm calling instructions. The teachings Jesus gave his disciples when he sent them out into the world. So, I mean, we can read that and go, oh, this was for them then. This has nothing to do with us. Or, let's see, the Word of God is supposed to transcend history and cultures and speak to us. So I'm going with the latter here. So this is instructions to us as followers of Jesus Christ of how to interact in the world. So we've previously begun looking at the section of Matthew where Jesus had commissioned and sent out the 12 disciples to spread the gospel of the kingdom. Sent them out two at a time, go and six different directions throughout Judea and begin to advance the gospel. I want to look at this with this in mind. On 9/11 2001, of course, we had the great trauma to all of us that were here then of the attacks that happened that day. And since then, we've had various wars in the Near East. We've been hearing a lot about PTSD. We're hearing of soldiers, men and women, returning from war with this condition. If you know anybody that has been in one of these war theaters, you know what PTSD does to many people, right? And so we want to think about this term for a moment, PTSD. What's the P stand for? Post. What's the T stand for? Traumatic. What's the S stand for? Stress. And the D? Disorder. The object of this acronym is the word disorder. Disorder. All the other words are modifying this idea of disorder. Folks, you can have two people experience the exact same traumatic event, and one person's trauma becomes a disorder, and the other person seems to be able to go on with life virtually unscathed. Why? What's going on? For example, two people can be in the same automobile, experience the same accident, and one has a lifelong struggle with trauma and the other person just doesn't. Back in the day when early on in an apartment, you're decorating with posters, we had a poster in this apartment. Barb and I went to Europe for 3 months, bicycled around Europe, and we sublet our apartment to this wonderful single mom and her daughter for those 3 months. And when we came back, the mom asked us, can I have this poster? Because it really spoke to my heart. And my daughter and I, we think about the words there, and sure, take the poster. And it simply said this at the bottom of the poster. It said, stop praying for an easy life, rather pray for the strength to be an overcomer. Pray for the strength to be an overcomer. You're going to have two children grow up in the same dysfunctional home with the same parents being treated just about as badly as the other, all right? So there's traumatic homes. There are dysfunctional homes. It's very rare when a home isn't dysfunctional, by the way. I don't know if you know that. There are a few. Amazingly, seemingly perfect, everything is done properly. And anyway, wasn't my home, all right? No, it was not. We had a father who, looking back now, had PTSD from World War II. So I don't know that he would ever make an excuse about that. No, he'd just rather be angry, snarling, upset. He was a good man in many, many ways. He was nice most of the time, you know, except when he wasn't. All right. So trauma happens. PTSD happens. It affects homes. There's dysfunction of all kinds. But you can be one of those two children in the same home, and one, again, bounces, goes through life, shakes it off. It doesn't stop them. And the other, it can crush them. It can cause addiction, and it can cause all kinds of difficulties throughout life. So what's the difference? At the men's breakfast yesterday, I was at a table with Ron Huxley, and for those that don't know Ron, I saw him, here he is. he's a marriage and family therapist, And we had a war vet at our table who was sharing about the things he'd been doing to overcome his PTSD. First of all, just coming to the realization that he had it. You know, his various wives would tell him that he had a problem. But, you know, but he got it. He figured it out. He got help. It was another vet who said, you know, you have all these markers. You should go to the Veterans Administration and get analyzed. And he did and got help. And he's written books now about this whole experience. In any event, as we were listening to this fellow and the war vet was sharing these things, Ron shared with us, and I'm not remembering the exact phrase Ron used, but he shared that there's a whole field of study among psychological healing looking at resilience, how some are able to have resilience in the face of their experience with trauma. Why some do and some don't, and why some recover and some don't. There's a whole field of study. I thought that was fascinating. Now, as we continue with Jesus' instructions to his disciples, we want to understand the dynamics of the world that they were entering and how the world would react to them and how they, in return, would respond. And it seems to me, as I was thinking about this passage this week and meditating on it, it seems to me Jesus was preparing their hearts to overcome trauma. He was getting them ready for what was going to happen. Listen to the word of God. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 16 and following. There it says, Jesus says, "See, I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." You have to understand, this is not a major teaching of Jesus. It's not a secondary teaching of Jesus. This is really a tertiary, third level stuff. It's specific to this situation and to anybody else that has trauma. He's preparing them. I'm sending you out like sheep. You're not sheep, you're like sheep. We like sheep have gone astray. We are like sheep, right? Sheep are dumb. They're easily eaten by other things. They do fine in groups, but by themselves they're helpless. Boy, that sounds like me. I don't know. The first thing Jesus does here is he tells these team members, these young men who are following him, he tells them the truth. He speaks the truth to them. Truth-telling is very powerful. It keeps us from accepting the lies of the world. I don't know if you noticed there are people in the world that lie to us. I mean, you know, people on CNN say Fox News is lying. People on Fox News say CNN people are lying, and I think they're both right. Okay, so I think there's lies. There's plenty of lies out there. I'm not saying one's lying more than the other. I'll leave that up to you to discern. But in any event, there's a lot of lies in the world, and Jesus isn't sugarcoating what their mission will look like. There are wolves in the world. You're a sheep. What do wolves want to do with sheep? Wants to devour them. They want to confuse, use, abuse the sheep for their own ends. They want to take advantage of the sheep. If you're a sheep, the best thing that could happen is you'll just get fleeced and not eaten, right? So, I mean, that's what wolves do. They eat, or they'll fleece you, or they'll do one and then the other. Then Jesus says something that these seemingly backwater, unsophisticated fishermen would understand more readily than we modern people understand. He says to them, be wise. Be wise. Now, we don't have a tradition of wisdom in our culture. We have a tradition of education, but not of wisdom. See, this is what we used to get from church. As a culture, people would go to church and they would get wisdom. Education would happen in one vector of society, and then wisdom would be communicated. And that's what had happened with these these rubes, these backwater fishermen. They had actually grown up in a culture where their main focus in their educational system was wisdom. Here's a whole book of pithy, simple statements that you can memorize very easily, one after the other, that are just brimming with wisdom on how to interact with other people and not to be a bad person and how to be abused by others and how to overcome and so forth. Jesus is reminding them of that. This is your heritage. Be wise. Don't be a dumb sheep. Be a wise follower of me. Be wise. The education of these young men was based on the wisdom of the Hebrew Scriptures. When one reads, studies, and thinks through the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, one is moved from being a naive fool or even a sophisticated fool, and we have gobs of those in our culture. Sophisticated fools. So sophisticated. Know so many answers to so many things. They can win trivial pursuits, but they're not wise. Sophisticated fools. That's a type of fool in the book of Proverbs. The goal was to move people from being that kind of fool to being wise, shrewd, understanding of motives, and the self-deluding of the abusers of the world. This is what abusers look like. Be wise. Don't let them get you. Jesus said, remember your heritage. Be wise. He's saying, don't forget these lessons of your youth. Practice the wisdom you've learned. Just because you're doing good works doesn't mean you're going to suddenly, people are going to be good to you. What are you here for? I'm here to help people. Oh, good, I'm going to let you help me. I'm going to fleece you. One of the great bits of advice when I first started going back to church in my mid-teens, one of the great things, this youth movement that I was part of, the leaders of that youth movement would stand up at small and large gatherings, and some were like conventions or 2,000 or 3,000 people, and they'd say, you are going to see people in your church who are going to use, abuse, be hypocritical. Don't let them define your faith. Follow Jesus Christ. Don't let the bad people turn you off to what's good. And that really, at first I'm going, oh no, these are all wonderful. You know, I was a sheeple. It's like, whoa, church, everybody good. No. No, unfortunately. And when people went sideways in my life, people that I respected and loved and even admired, when their own lives produced bad fruit, I wasn't surprised. I went, oh, that's what they were talking about. Oh, look, that person has a rage problem. I didn't even know. I thought he was the nicest person in the church, and I can't think that anymore, but okay. We get involved with church, with spiritual people, with those who seem to be seeking after God and the truth. We sometimes fall into this naive belief that these people are basically good, kind, and won't hurt us. There are wolves, Jesus said, in the church. Jesus said that. Don't be surprised, there are wolves in the church. Sermon on the Mount, chapter 7, Matthew, read it. Beware of the wolves. I wish he could have set it up where he goes, you know what, we're just not going to let any wolves near any of the sheep in our church. We're going to be free of wolves. If you're a wolf, you can't come here. We're going to put a force field, and they won't be able to. He didn't do that. Rather, he converts wolves to sheep. He wants to help people. So we don't keep the bad people, whoever they may be. People will come to me and say, Gary, I don't know if I trust so-and-so. I don't know if I trust him either. Let's love on him. I don't know. Half a dozen years ago, there's a fellow here, quite intellectual, professorial, and he was going through a great faith struggle, and he was sharing all the reasons he had, all these struggles with everybody that would listen to him. We shouldn't let him hear. He's going to hurt people's faith. It's, well, then their faith needs to be tested. Your faith is greater than his ideas. And when he would say the same things publicly, I had the right to stand up and challenge him. And he would back off, to his credit. You see, he was actually here seeking healing, which he desperately needed. And we were able to help. God converts wolves into sheep. Those wolves often have, that become sheep, often have trust issues down the road. But when we go to church, we just want to assume the best for everybody around us, and that's not bad. Assume the best, but be wise, Jesus said. Be aware. There are those who will take full advantage of you, he's saying. Be innocent as doves, he says. Don't stop there, though. See, we confuse innocence with goodness. The Bible never does. Innocence is a state of being. We're to grow from and into wisdom. That's what the book of Proverbs is all about. Many a young man and young woman have become wise simply by reading one chapter of Proverbs every day. There's just enough to fill a month. And they do it again, and you do that for a couple of years. And then you get your favorite Proverbs, and they become part of your mind and heart. And then you walk into a situation, and the circumstances are going sideways, and that proverb pops into your head. Oh, that's what that means. Be wise, Jesus said. Be that kind person. Be the person that won't hurt. Be the protector. Be the, you know, some of us sheep become sheepdogs. Be that sheepdog for Jesus in the church. That's fine. But don't be naive. Be wise. Shrewd is one perfectly good translation of that word here. Be shrewd. Of course, you already know Jesus' most famous statement on truth, right? Jesus' most famous statement. It's chiseled into an archway as you enter Caltech. And know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. It'll set you free. See, truth is very important to us to find freedom. Because truth is light. Truth gives light. The darkness flees. We know what we're dealing with when we walk in truth. But Jesus didn't start with that statement. Listen to the whole statement starting in verse 31 of John 8. Then Jesus said to the Jewish people who had believed in him, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples." What's a disciple then? Someone who continues in his word. Being a doer of the word, as James says. There's the word. This is what it says to do. I'm going to do it. That's a disciple. And there's a connection. You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. You see how important this is? Being a disciple, a follower of Jesus Christ, someone who hears his word, understands his word, and does his word, is the precursor to knowing the truth. Just hearing words isn't enough. It's doing the word. And then you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. More on this topic another time. Continuing chapter 10 of Matthew, verse 17. Beware of them, for they will hand you over the wolves. They will hand you over to councils and flog you in the synagogues. And you will be dragged before governors and kings because of me as a testimony to them and the Gentiles. Why is this happening to me, Jesus? To be a testimony to them and the Gentiles. I don't like it to be a testimony to them and the Gentiles, but I don't want to get flogged. I think I just want to go and farm or fish. But there's a testimony. Your testimony will not be heard unless you go through this. Ooh. Apostle Paul, he testified before Nero, emperor of the Roman Empire. Because of this. And he was excited to do so. I'm not saying he was happy, but it was his goal. And in fact, we read in Philippians he's writing all these brothers and sisters who minister to me while I'm in prison here in Rome. They greet you. as do some of the members of Caesar's household, the Praetorian Guard. So the people guarding Paul were so impressed with him, some of them converted to Christ. It wasn't a nice experience, and they will drag you before governors and kings because of me as a testimony to them and the Gentiles. So the Gentile world, in the next 100 years, a third of the Roman Empire converted to Christianity, from nobody being a Christian to a third. Why are bad things happening to me? It gives me a testimony. People listen. You're suffering well, you're overcoming the trauma in your life. So this is the first lesson for us, becoming resilient to trauma. It is to become wise and to walk in the truth. Don't lie to yourself. One of the best-selling books of 2019, 12 Rules by Jordan Peterson, said one of the things that changed his life, being a professor, he would stand in front of people and talk and he would embellish. And somewhere along the way, he decided, you know, I am only going to speak what is absolutely true from now on. And he realized it starts in my own mind. I am going to only tell myself the truth, and I am only going to speak things. And when I say something that isn't true, I'm going to stop and go, wait a minute, that wasn't true. Revolutionizes life. The power of truth makes us resilient. So if we walk in the truth, it prepares us for trauma. Then we won't have to deal with the shock and pain of having been lied to, deceived, and manipulated. Why? Because we are now able to walk in truth. The second lesson is to be prepared for the fact that people in this world will purposefully abuse you. Now, again, this is not a major teaching, and this isn't something we want to focus on all the time in our faith, but this is part of what Jesus is preparing us for so that we can be resilient. Not all people, not most of the time, are going to be bad to us. Most people are good and decent, are going to be kind to us, but be prepared when it isn't that way. That's all. It might be even the best people, even people you admire, even people in government, rulers who seem wise or benevolent, they may suddenly inexplicably turn on you and become abusive. I have a friend who wrote a book on a controversial subject. I won't talk about that subject or that person, but a very famous minister of the gospel on his television show held up her book and said, "This person should know better." What? "But I love you, and you've meant so much to my life." And did he call her and talk to her about it privately? No. In front of the world, he rebukes her. Be ready. Be ready, that's all. You don't have to walk around in suspicion of everybody and, oh, maybe somebody's going to hurt me. That's not the point. The point is, take a deep breath, be ready for people going sideways on us, as I have gone sideways on people, as most of us in this room, there's probably maybe one or two people that haven't gone sideways on someone. I lost my temper with a senior pastor who was my employer one day in a private staff meeting. I mean, the room turned red. You know, that when you're seeing red thing, it did. And words came out of my mouth and, you know, rage and so forth. And I walked out of the room thinking, well, I guess it's time to find another job because he's not going to keep me around after that. But in his mercy, he did. And you know what? It sparked a really deep conversation and reconciliation and forgiveness. It can happen to any of us. Any of us can become abusers. And any of us can be abused. Don't be surprised by it. When you carry the testimony of Jesus, you will be perceived as judgmental. Even if you're not being judgmental in any way. Just the fact you say, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. Oh my gosh. People read into that all kinds of things that you don't intend and aren't part of your heart. And then they'll pull back or they will judge you or tell other people, he's one of those, she's one of those. and you carry the testimony of Jesus, you'll be perceived as judgmental, even if you hold no judgments against those that feel that way. When Jesus is living within you, the light of his presence will convict the hearts of those who are walking in darkness, even if they don't know they are in darkness. So how do you prepare for such situations and strange reactions? Listen, verse 19, when they hand you over, do not worry about how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you at that time, for it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. You see, your Heavenly Father will fill your mind and mouth with the right things to say at the right moment. Again, just be honest, be truthful in those moments. With all gentleness and kindness, God will take care of the situation. Now, it behooves us to spend time in the Word, time thinking about it, reading it, meditating on it, internalizing it. And then we will have abundance in our heart. The mouth speaks, Jesus said. We'll have abundance for us to speak. He'll give you the words or the power to be appropriately silent. That's a wonderful gift that has happened in my life on a few occasions. When I've seen red, the power of the Holy Spirit says, just shut up, appropriately silent. Verse 21, brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all because of my name. You see, this what Jesus is talking about here, we don't experience in the United States, to a very great extent at all. And there's some cultures that are shame-based. And if you shame the family, then you kill the family member who shamed your family. This is not uncommon even today in the Near East. And becoming a follower of Jesus Christ might be that for some people. It might be a shameful thing. We see the rise of shaming in our culture like no time in the history of America. It's rising. I have a relative whose wife started going to church and started reading the Bible and started considering faith in Jesus Christ. And her husband, who's my relative, said to her, couldn't you become a Buddhist or something? What's wrong with you? Don't you know what those people are like? You see, he had all these judgments. They're judgmental. Well, you're judgmental. Nothing wrong with people who are followers of Buddha. I'm not saying that. Don't hear that. Okay? I think there's ways Buddha points to Christ, so I'll just leave that there. But that's not the point. The point is the reaction to Christ was visceral in this relative. Again, hated because when we walk in the light, we walk in the truth, we become become this judgment against the lie. The one who endures, Jesus goes on to say, verse 22, part B, the one who endures to the end will be saved. What? The one who endures to the end, you mean all this bad stuff's going to happen, you have to endure to the end to be saved? When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. So the first lesson in becoming resilient to trauma, become wise, walk in the truth. The second lesson is to understand that some people in this world are abusive and will abuse you. Don't be surprised by this. The third lesson, it's okay to leave abusive situations. I can't tell you how many really sincere spiritual leaders I have heard say exactly the opposite. And when I was young, it was like, oh, okay, you have to stay and take it. Oh, okay. That's a biblical principle, I guess. It's not. Jesus didn't say, and when they abuse you, stay there and take it. He says, flee. Flee is a very strong word for leave, take off. You need to stay in the abusive situation and let God use that to do something in the heart of the abuser. No. You're being abused, leave. Leave. If you have the power to. I'm speaking here specifically of physical abuse or sometimes when someone is flying off the handle with verbal abuse, it's okay to leave. Jesus is saying that it might be parents who are being abusive. Children of seniors may be abusive to them, husbands to wives and wives to husbands. Jesus says, flee when they won't listen? Hey, it's really good advice. Step out of the home, out of the situation, leave. If you're the one being abusive, maybe shut your mouth and leave. It's okay. You can't leave. We have to work this out. No, it's okay to leave. If you go out that door, it's okay to leave. It's okay. Along with fleeing the abusive situation, Jesus says, part B, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. This is the fourth lesson. This is the fourth lesson, is to believe that God is giving us the power to endure. Some of you missed that. Some of you are distracted, so I'll say this again. Believe that God is giving us the power to endure. A theological word for this is perseverance. Perseverance. Webster defines perseverance this way: continued effort to do or achieve something despite difficulties, failure, or opposition. Steadfastness. See, this is where the power of your faith comes into to the equation of life. Believe God, trust God, understand that God will empower you, healing you up, strengthen you for the demands that you will be facing in this life. Believe that. That's perseverance. Believe me, folks. As I've been going through this divorce, I felt completely empty of all spiritual power on many occasions. Just absolutely drained. Absolutely no reserves. It's like going to the well, there's nothing there. No water. And I have had to fall back on this truth and this reality. God's power is perfected in my weakness. He will continue to give me the power to persevere. I don't need to turn to substance abuse or other dysfunctional activities to escape my very real pain. I can experience it, accept it, give it to God, and know that He will use even this to create in me the new heart He intends. He's going to use even this. If I could exit the door of this in my life, I would. I would. Jesus says, the one who endures to the end will be saved. Then Jesus says this very cryptic thing, verse 23, part B, for truly I tell you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. There, of course, there's the plain meaning here of this, that he's sending out these six teams, two by two. They're going to go out. They're going to prepare the ground for the God. Some of them are going to heal the sick and cast out demons and declare the good news and get people to get baptized and converted and all of that. But Jesus says, I'm coming. I'm falling right behind you. I'm going in six directions. I'll be there. However, there's a deeper truth here than that. No matter how long the difficulty continues in our life, believe that Jesus will come. No matter how hard it is, He will enter into your circumstances with you. He'll enter into them with us. He will complete anything that we are lacking. The job will be done. The mission will be accomplished. We need to do our part, of course, but Jesus is coming to our side in the midst of the struggle. He will see to it that we are successful in the end. Jesus is coming to help. I mean, you're going out. You've never done this stuff before. You're doing this street evangelism throughout Judea, and you're running into things that you never imagined, and boom, they're popping up in your face, these really negative things, and you're going, I don't know what to do. But Jesus is coming. He'll help. He'll give us the guidance. Verse 24, a disciple is not above the teacher, nor a slave above the master. Jesus is the teacher and the master here, by the way. Verse 25, it is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher and the slave like the master if they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, Lord of the flies, or the father of demons. How much more will they malign those of his household? Hey, you've noticed, everybody, they've calling me, Jesus said, they're calling me names. Guess what? You're next. It happens to the followers of Jesus Christ. How much more will they malign the household? There's so much here we can't really unpack today. There's so much to get into, starting with this verse next time. So let's recap what we've heard today. The first lesson is become resilient to trauma. by becoming wise and to walk in the truth. The second lesson is to understand that some people in this world are abusive and will abuse you. Don't be surprised by this. The third lesson, it's okay to leave abusive situations. Somebody needs to hear that today. This is the fourth lesson, is to believe that God is giving us the power to endure. The theological word for this is perseverance. Fifth and lastly, we need to do our part, knowing that Jesus is coming and he will see to it that we are successful in the end. Would you pray with me?